Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
Discover over 100 episodes of Bartholomew Town on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Once I found that history can be what you make of it and you can get really excited with it, that's when I started liking it.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On today's episode, I sit down with the creator of the Providence City Archives Instagram handle, Shayna Weintraub. Now, Shayna is the reference and multimedia administrator for the City of Providence's Division of Archives and History. And some of you may be very well familiar with her work because she has exploded onto the scene as an Instagram producer, putting out all sorts of amazing content that she unearths from the deepest, darkest parts of Providence City Hall and the City Archives. So stick around for an exciting conversation with Shayna Weintraub in just a matter of moments. All right, you still have time to get down to Roger Williams Park Zoo in Providence for the Jack-O-Lantern Spectacular 2019 presented by Citizens Bank. This year, you're traveling through a seasonal wonderland celebrating the joys of New England. You'll feast your senses on autumn's beauty, winter's swirling snow, spring's first blossoms, and summer's ocean breezes. It's the Jack-O-Lantern Spectacular 2019 presented by Citizens Bank. And it's going on now through November 3rd at Roger Williams Park Zoo in Providence. New episodes of the Bartholomew Town Podcast every Tuesday and Friday, and daily content on Instagram at Bartholomew Town Podcast. All right, let's get right to it. Exploring the Providence City Archives with Shayna Weintraub. So let's get right into the Instagram account, because that popped up like last summer, spring, and I was pretty interested. You remarked that I like had an overly enthusiastic comment, yes, right out of the gate.
Yes, yeah. I started it right around the beginning of the year, back in January, and I remember it being at that time because it was right around, you know, the AFC Championship, the Super Bowl time, and I found this photo of this old ice truck, because they would have to bring ice in here from colder places or just keep it. We didn't have refrigerators, anything like that. So there was this truck and it said ice across it. And I was like, oh, okay. So this, like, I can tie this into football somehow. Okay. I said something like, this is what's going to be flowing through Tom Brady's veins come this Sunday or something like that. And I did like hashtag Patriots, hashtag Providence, hashtag all those things. And that was the first time I was like, oh, people like this. Oh, okay. And then it just like kind of took off. And then, yeah, a few posts later, I was looking back at it last night. There was something about the Point Street Bridge that you did comment on. And I said something like, I could say many things about this Point Street structure, but I'll keep it ... abridged. And, you know, they say that puns are like the lowest form of humor, but I love it.
Oh, I'm all about
it. It's my
puns.
Humor.
Yeah.
So it's been really fun doing that.
Yeah, it's really cool. It brings, you know, obviously it ties together a field that is, you know, it's sort of niche in a way, history and peering through historical documents. It's not something that I think everybody does at night. We'll put it that way. There's now this bridge that takes it into, with the social media platforms, that you're taking into the modern era, I guess, and kind of, I don't know, representing it and also like leaving it for the historical record in a different way as well.
Yeah, yeah. I totally forgot until I was poking around Instagram that they actually have a part of their app that is their archive. I was like, oh, no way. This means so many things. But yeah, like history can become entertainment now. Like we've seen that with Hamilton, and we see it with, you know, those shows on Netflix that are about comedy and history and tying it together in a way that is for people that don't necessarily like history, for people that really didn't like history growing up. Like, I didn't like history when I was in high school at all. I remember writing a paper, and I was just so bored with it, I just started just typing about how, oh, this is what Oprah would do. That's what Oprah would do. And my,
what Oprah would do?
Yeah. I didn't get a good grade on that one. But once I found that history can be what you make of it, and you can get really excited with it, that's when I started liking it. When I started at Rhode Island College, I was like, oh, I could take anything I wanted. I'm really an open book. I'm interested in a lot of things. And it wasn't until I took a class with David Espinoza where he was excited. Like, he was beyond excited. He was thrilled. And this was also a 100-level class, so you have, like, freshmen and sophomores in there with their eyelids half closed, you know, with, like, the largest Dunkin' coffee that they can find. And then there's me in the front just jazzed out of my mind that he's super stoked about this subject that nobody really gets into. And so that's when I declared as a history major, and then I took History 200 with Quentin B. Hughes, and she just, I remember she came into the room and she was so excited about I think it was like labor history or something, but just the excitement and seeing that these professionals can love something so much because they found something they're interested in. And then I just started finding things that I was interested in, and yeah, it's about making, I think that things like Netflix, anything on Broadway, anything on social media has to do with history. It's really for people to enjoy and not to really think hard about. Because a lot of people who do like history, the conventional history that you do learn in high school, they know where to find all the information. They can go look it up. They have the books. They have the text, all those things. But for people that are just scrolling through Instagram that happen to see, oh, that's where my house used to be. No way. And Providence is such a good city for that because it's old enough that we have houses from the 1800s, early 1900s, some even from the late 1700s. And just to be able to see that the city has grown and you are a part of that history, it's really cool.
What about educating people who live in such a bubble today that they have really no sense of Rhode Island history or Providence history or anything like that? I mean, building, I guess, constructing a timeline for people, is that something you're trying to kind of long-term create?
As far as a timeline, I'm not really sure. I think that I'm just trying to create interest in Rhode Island history, and especially with social media, how big it's grown in the past decade, it can be utilized as a tool for teaching or just people, even people who are lifelong learners. They can be in their 60s, 70s, 80s if they're using social media. Yeah. They're on Facebook. Yeah, those ones are on Facebook. but they want to learn these things. And with the older crowd, it's fun too, because there's things that they recognize. I think I posted something from, it was like the 60s or something the other day. It was a Benny's on Broad Street. And somebody's like, oh, I remember that. And I was like, oh, cool. My parents weren't even alive then.
It's really fun to see stuff that, you know, reminds you of even like the 1950s, 60s, early 70s for our general age group as well, to kind of remember how, you know, what it is that people somewhat yearned for here in Rhode Island. You know, I remember there's a photo, I don't remember if you posted or someone else, of like a back to school parade in Cranston, you know, with like balloons, like Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade style, giant balloons going down, whatever it was, you know,
Park Avenue.
But things like that, you know, piecing together the civic pride and the, you know, just sort of the community that existed here right before our times.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's been a lot of Rhode Island pride for a long time, and to remember that in the form of a photo or in the form of a document is so important. And it does, you know, it does reach all generations. There's infographics and things like that and data on Instagram that can show you who's following you. And it's like between the ages of like 13 and 20 or something like that. And you know that there's people who are younger than 13 on Instagram, but for the sake of this, there's a decent amount of people that are in that age group that are following it, and they're learning these things. And who knows, like, they can be taking it back to class and showing their friends. Or there's even teachers who have followed me for their classes. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, this is getting into the classroom. They're utilizing this social media as a tool to teach people in a completely different way than even I learned when I was in high school, and that was 7 years ago, and it's completely different now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the archives themselves.
Yeah.
What do you do specifically on a day-to-day basis besides manage this massive social media network you've built here?
So I walk in, I sit down, I open up my computer, I wait about 30 minutes for it to load. And I help people. I'm the reference and multimedia administrator, multimedia and social media. I work with a couple other people. Caleb Horton is the head archivist. Brittany Gorman is the deputy archivist. And then we have Richard Izzy doing cataloging and assisting Caleb in his day-to-day things. And we have people coming in all the time. I don't know if a lot of people know that you can just come into the archives. We're open 8:30 to 4:30 Monday through Friday. We're closed federal holidays, but you can come in anytime, and people can check out what we have. Walk in, ask us. We have directories, vital books, we have photos, we just have a lot of things. And we get students coming in, a lot of RISD students looking for blueprints as of late. We get just students doing their history work, their history research rather. And yeah, and I get reference requests, things like that. And I do a lot of scanning. There's never nothing to do. Mm. There's always going to be something to do. And if you're bored, then you shouldn't be.
Gotcha.
Lately I've been scanning a lot of police negatives. We hold the Providence Police Archives.
Like the mugshots?
Yeah, we got those.
We've got one on the wall right here from this guy, Mark Michelson, who collects anonymous mugshots, historical mugshots, and prints them as pieces of art.
Oh, that's
you should stop
cool.
in your office sometime.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, on that note, too, there was a post I made a while back, earlier on in the Instagram life of the archives Instagram. It was a mugshot of this guy, and I don't forget his name. I don't even remember what he did, but he was wearing a Christmas sweater, and you can tell in the card that he has that it was March.
Gotcha.
And I said, you know, the only crime that this guy is guilty of is wearing a Christmas sweater in March. And I was laughing to myself. I still laugh to myself. I'm laughing to myself right now about it. But yeah, we have those mugshots. We have accident photos. We have event photos. A lot of people who were working as photographers for the police were taking photos of events. So in 1949, we had the safe driving event in Providence in September of 49. And it was a way to get people to drive a little bit safer. Cars weren't as safe as they are today. And certainly there was plenty of pedestrians that were being hit in Providence. And so there was this big event down the Kennedy Plaza area back when it was Exchange Place. And you had these people who were hired and dressed up as angels that were walking around and stopping people who were pedestrians and giving them cards and saying, you know, don't do this. You might get hit. You could be one of them. And then there was this man who was dressed as a Jayhawk, like a Jaybird, something like that, with this big, like, scary mask. Scary but funny. Like, you know those photos of, like, the really early, like, Easter bunnies that are terrifying? It's kind of like that. This figure was just walking around with these angels, and there's a photo of the angels chasing this person in a way to be like, no, we want to get after the pedestrians, the jaywalkers. And I saw that, and it was hilarious.
Amazing.
It was. I want to get that print and blow it up, poster, put it on my wall.
Yeah, you should definitely do that. You know what I mean?
It's pretty. There's funny things in the archives.
Yeah.
One of the cool things about the archives is we have those directors in the vital books, and so that holds a lot of people. A lot of people that are from Providence that were born, married, died in Providence. Not everybody, because up until a certain time, you weren't required to register any of this. But a fair amount of people, not just the important, like, quote unquote, important people that we know about today, like the Browns, the Angels, the Lippitts, so on and so forth. You have just your average everyday person, and you can see, you can sometimes track their life through their birth, marriage, death, where they lived. Sometimes you can find a photo of them. That's very, very, very rare. Whenever people do ask me, I try and look to see if I can. I try and stay away from the police part. I don't really necessarily want people to know that they are related to somebody who committed a bad crime. But no, so like looking through like the marriage books, you see these people who are getting married very young, from they're immigrants from other countries, and they're starting their life here. And then you can see a couple years later that they have a kid, and then the next year they have another kid. And then eventually they do pass away, and you can see how they passed away, if their spouse passed away before them, where it was. I think one of the more interesting vital pieces are the birth records, because there's a line that says, oh, you were this number child in your parents, you know, you like you're the first, you're the second, you're the third kid that your parents had. And one time I found number 18.
No way.
And I was just like, I took, yeah, I had to take a step back. I was like, oh, and I took a look at the age, and she was early 40s, something like that. But I found people who were as young as 13 in those books. And it tells a story about how life was like this, how it was different than it is today. While still things still happen like that today, it's not as prevalent. Like, you don't see that as often, especially 18 kids, unless you're the Duggars or, you know, TLC. TLC has contacted you if you've had 18 kids. but yeah, we have things like that. We have Providence Reform School records, and the Reform School was this institution on the east side where Martin Gregorian School is right now. And it housed kids that were between the ages of like 8 and 18. And it was between 1850 and 1880. And this was a time period when children are leaving the mills. They're leaving work in the mills, and they have nothing to do but cause crime. And not all kids were doing that, of course, but there was an uptick in crime among adolescents. And so this institution was one of those places where kids would go to be reformed. So the Providence Reform School. And we have a lot of the letters from that school. We have a lot of the receipts. We have a lot of the documents where they were given out to other, to people living in other cities or other towns who needed help. And it's interesting seeing these documents of people writing to the superintendent, James Talcott, which he was a controversial figure in the Reform School, the history of the Reform School, where it was found out that he was treating these children as he shouldn't, let's say, and there was a huge investigation. So we also have this very thick investigation book. I used that one time when I was writing a paper, and it's huge. It's massive. There was very few pages that I actually took something out of, but I got so much out of those pages. But so you get to these letters that these people write, and seeing how they're talking to Talcott, or seeing how they're talking to his wife, or even a child or a parent that's writing because their child is there, it tells a story about somebody who was there. These people lived. These people were breathing. I think that we forget now, kind of, with history, we know it as, oh, people lived, people did this thing, yada, yeah, sure, okay. I see that they were born, they got married, they died, okay. But they actually were living. They, every second of their life, they were doing something like we do today. And we don't, I don't think we stop and pause and think about that nearly as much as we should. And on that note as well, with the Instagram taking things, like yesterday I posted something about this kid. There was one of the policemen went into a school and was giving a talk, and I was just looking at this photo and I was zooming in on it, and I see this kid in the front row and he just has this look on his face, and he's just staring off into the distance. And so I keep scanning around the photo, and I see in the background it says, oh, for lunch today it's, you know, a Frankfurt and roll.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And tomorrow's baked chicken or whatever. And I was like, oh, this is so funny. Like, they had school lunch. Like, they had school lunches too. Like, that's a part of their life as well. Like, I had Taco Tuesday at school. Like, or Chicken Nugget Friday. Sure, yeah, they had Frankfurter Tuesday, maybe.
Frankfurter roll, I think.
Yes.
Or bun.
Yeah, something like that. Ooh, delicious. Is that all I got? But history, there's so many aspects to history.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it. You can find a history of anything. Like, you can find a history of, like, my iPhone, or you can, like, this Yeti bottle, or, I mean, even these, like, hardwood floors, or, like, the paint that's on those floors. Like, what paint is that? Like, there's history behind the company that made it, or that color. You can find anything. And I think that's kind of what I'm trying to do with Instagram and Twitter, is showing people that it's infinitely interesting. Anybody who's interested in anything, if they come into the archives, give me 30 minutes and I can find something that will make them say, oh, that is so cool. That's just neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You're really pioneering in that regard. There are definitely other historical operations around your archives in the state that are doing other work that's great, and they're doing an awesome job as well. Certainly the Rhode Island State Archives, they have a lot of interactive programs, great people working down there. Nicole's down there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a great operation. It's not to, you know, compare and contrast necessarily, but in a sense though, you're, you know, really forward thinking in engaging a certain demographic, or a broad demographic, I guess, of people that use Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
But also kind of taking history and putting it in front of people in a way that they can't ignore.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's funny, you're going to scroll by it. You might laugh. Hey, even if you laugh and you don't like it, that's still, it warms my heart.
Definitely.
But it's getting to people in a different way than what they knew history as before. And our office is pretty young. I'm the youngest. Our deputy and our head archivist are within 4 or 5 years of each other, late 20s, early 30s. And it's getting younger. Like everything, things are getting younger. And we're changing. Things are going to always be changing. And it's good to go with the flow and not against it. And, I mean, the archives itself has only been open since 1978. And we're stuck in the highest room of the tallest tower of City Hall, I like to say.
Right under the Plunder Dome there, the famous dome.
Oh, yeah. We're the place where you access the dome. You go right through us.
Yeah.
And it's a fairly new department. I think we might be one of the youngest departments in the city. And there's just so much more to do. I look at other archives and they've been open for decades longer than we have, and they are more established, and we still have a long way to go until I think it's like, it's a good goal to catch up to all the history we have and to get everything processed, but that's never going to happen. I saw a tweet from, I think it was the Library of Virginia, and I think it was meant to be funny. It might have been serious. I didn't quite catch on to what it was, but they said their processing time, and it said, how long is it going to take? And it's like 6,000 years.
Yeah.
I was like,
exactly right.
Yeah. I was like, okay, that's not a joke. But there's always something to do. And as long as we're continuing to do this, we might as well do this in a way that is up to date. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're trying also to get a new website. We're trying to get our catalogs online. We're trying to get our photos, blueprints, documents, all that online. And it's going to be a long process, but rest assured, we are trying to get that to the public in a way that is new to this decade. We're trying to compete, for lack of a better word, compete with the other the bigger institutions like Boston, who have these things readily available. So if you're, you know, back in, you know, Seattle, Washington, you can see our Providence City documents or something like that if you're somebody who's in Seattle, Washington doing history on Providence, Rhode Island. But right. Yeah.
That person.
Yeah, that person all the way out there. Just getting it, having it accessible to people that it wasn't accessible to before.
Yeah.
And that's what really we're trying to do. It's everybody's history. We're servants to the public, and we're trying to get all of our thing as much as we can to the people of the city.
As an archivist, how much are you open to pushback on the very general, generic sort of timeline, time frame that we assume is accurate here in the U.S. or even in the Western world, whatever it is, but specifically in Rhode Island, the idea that, you know, sometime in around 1600 is when you usually see most timelines begin. But mm-hmm. I would argue that Rhode Island history is tied to Native history, goes way back, and there's a lot of details missing as well about possible other explorations and, mm-hmm. and other peoples that may have been here. Are you open to that possibility? Although I know you're focused on Providence, which is not, you know, going back into that level of time, but...
Absolutely. Yeah. If there is a history that we're missing, we want to have it. It's about finding it. A lot about history now is giving a story and giving a voice to the people who didn't have it before. So we do have the indigenous peoples, and they were here. They absolutely were here, and they had a life. They had a very full life. And before anybody showed up, before Roger Williams showed up. And we do want to be able to tell that story. It's about having the things to tell it with that we are missing. Included in that are, like, this past year, it was the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riot. And I realized that we don't have anything in our archive for LGBT history. And that's not because we don't want it. It's because we don't have it. We have a lot of city documents. We have a lot of municipal documents. And save for things like city council resolutions or maybe something it wouldn't even be in a directory. There's very, very few places where you can find things like social and cultural history within an archive. If you're going to look for things like that, you'd probably go to the Historical Society that has a lot more biographical things. But I noticed that we didn't have that, and I thought that was lacking. There's ways that we've discussed in our office how to bring in histories that were missing, and it's a little tough because you know that there's so much out there. There's so many things that you just don't know are there. But it also makes it very exciting when you find it. And that's the cool thing about my job is that any given day, I can go in and find something new and leave feeling like I won a prize. Something like that. We're very open to not changing, but adding to. Adding to, and it is exciting to be able to be a part of that. Certainly. Yeah.
Super cool. Last mm-hmm. question. Sure. Funding this. How is that done?
We are a division of the clerk, and we are funded by the taxpayers. So we get every fiscal year, we get money in our budget, and I'll be honest, I'm not the person that knows any about that.
It's
taxpayer funded.
Taxpayers should feel like they should be engaged with this if they'd like to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. We are here for the taxpayers and the non-taxpayers. If you're from a place that isn't Providence, you're also more than welcome to come in. If you are too far away to come in, 8:30 or 4:30 Monday through Friday, 25 Dorrance Street, downtown Providence. You can email us, you can call us, and we are more than happy to help people with their research. We are funded by the taxpayers. In the past, there's been grants. There has been donor offers, just a variety of ways that we can fund our what we're doing. And I mean, we could always use more, but we always take what we get and we do the best that we absolutely do the best we can with it. And it's about taking care of our city in document form.
As always, it's a great pleasure to spend some time together here on the podcast. Remember, new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. And there's over 130 episodes waiting for you at BartholomewTown.com, RIPodcast.com, or your preferred podcast app. Until next time, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.